The night Ephia Otre was born into the musky heat of Fantiland, a fire raged through the woods just outside her father's compound. It moved quickly, tearing a path for days. It lived off the air. It slept in caves and hid in trees. It burned up and through, unconcerned with what wreckage it left behind, until it reached an Ashanti village. There it disappeared, becoming one with the night. Ephia's father, Kobi Otra, left his first wife, Baba, with a new baby, so that he might survey the damage to his yams, that most precious crop known far and wide to sustain families. Kobi had lost 7 yams, and he felt each loss as a blow to his own family. He knew then that the memory of the fire that burned, then fled, would haunt him, his children, and his children's children for as long as the line continued. When he came back into Baba's hut to find Ephia, the child of the night's fire, shrieking into the air, he looked at his wife and said, "We will never again speak of what happened today." The villagers began to say that the baby was born of the fire, that this was the reason Baba had no milk. Ephia was nursed by Kobi's second wife, who had just given birth to a son 3 months before. Ephia would not latch on, and when she did, her sharp gums would tear at the flesh around the woman's nipples until she became afraid to feed the baby. Because of this, Ephia grew thinner, skin on small bird-like bones, with a large black hole of a mouth that expelled a hungry cry which could be heard throughout the village. Even on the days Baba did her best to smother it, covering the baby's lips with the rough palm of her left hand. "Love her," Kobi commanded, as though love were as simple an act as lifting food up from an iron plate and past one's lips. At night, Baba dreamed of leaving the baby in the dark forest so that the god Inyami could do with her as he pleased. Ephia grew older. The summer after her 3rd birthday, Baba had her first son. The boy's name was Fifi, and he was so fat that sometimes when Baba wasn't looking, Ephia would roll him along the ground like a ball. The first day that Baba let Ephia hold him, she accidentally dropped him. The baby bounced on his buttocks, landed on his stomach, and looked up at everyone in the room, confused as to whether or not he should cry. He decided against it, but Baba, who had been stirring banku, lifted her stirring stick and beat Ephia across her bare back. Each time the stick lifted off the girl's body, it would leave behind hot sticky pieces of banku that burned into her flesh. By the time Baba had finished, Ephia was covered with sores, screaming and crying. From the floor, rolling this way and that on his belly, Fifi looked at Ephia with his saucer eyes, but made no noise. Kobi came home to find his other wives attending to Ephia's wounds and understood immediately what had happened. He and Baba fought well into the night. Ephia could hear them through the thin walls of the hut where she lay on the floor, drifting in and out of a feverish sleep. In her dream, Kobi was a lion, and Baba was a tree. The lion plucked the tree from the ground where it stood and slammed it back down. The tree stretched its branches in protest, and the lion ripped them off one by one. The tree, horizontal, began to cry red ants that traveled down the thin cracks between its bark. The ants pooled on the soft earth around the top of the tree trunk. And so the cycle began. Baba beat Ephia. Kobi beat Baba. By the time Ephia had reached age 10, she could recite a history of the scars on her body. The summer of 1764, when Baba broke yams across her back. The spring of 1767, when Baba bashed her left foot with a rock, breaking her big toe so that it now always pointed away from the other toes. For each scar on Ifia's body, there was a companion scar on Baba's. But that didn't stop mother from beating daughter, father from beating mother. Matters were only made worse by Ifia's blossoming beauty. When she was 12, her breasts arrived, two lumps that sprung from her chest as soft as mango flesh. The men of the village knew that first blood would soon follow, and they waited for the chance to ask Baba and Kobi for her hand. The gifts started. One man tapped palm wine better than anyone else in the village, but another's fishing nets were never empty. Kobi's family feasted off Ifia's burgeoning womanhood. Their bellies, their hands, were never empty.